Hi, everyone. I'm Heidi.
And I'm Brittany.
And this is Transforming Together, HopeWorks Podcast. And so today we're talking about transforming the way we view reproductive justice. Mm-hmm. So, Brittany, are you all caught up on The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu?
Yes, I am. Thanks to you and Buddy sharing your Hulu account.
Hey. So we wanted to talk about The Handmaid's Tale today, which is a show that's currently airing on Hulu, and we're going to be covering the first four episodes in our podcast today, because that's what's on air as of our recording. So spoiler warning for the first four episodes. Mm-hmm. And so it's on Hulu, or if you don't have access to Hulu, we highly encourage that you read the book mm-hmm. that the show is based on, also called The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. And it was released originally in 1985. And actually, I heard this morning it has never been out of print since it was originally published, which is pretty cool. And so we're going to use The Handmaid's Tale today as a frame to talk about reproductive justice. Mm-hmm. So just to kind of get us started, for those of you who maybe haven't seen the show or read the book, or just as a refresher of what we're going to focus on, The Handmaid's Tale takes place in a world very similar to our own, mm-hmm. Just a couple years in the future, slightly different than ours, in which a totalitarian takeover has occurred by a fundamentalist Christian regime and has renamed the part of America that controls Gilead. Mm-hmm. And so in Gilead, these fundamentalist interpretations of the Old Testament of the Bible have been played out so that there's a focus on very, very strict and rigid gender roles for men and women. And lots of this is centered on fertility. Mm-hmm. So in this world, fertility rates have plummeted to maybe 5% of what they originally were. And that's being used as a way to control people and to shape the society. It's a little bit unclear in the world exactly why the fertility rate plummeted, but we vaguely know that it's connected to nuclear and chemical pollution and other forms of environmental degradation. But that's not how the Republic of Gilead frames it. They mm-hmm. frame it as being God's way of punishing our society for giving reproductive freedom and choice to women and for their sexual promiscuity mm-hmm. in the past, in our current world. And so it's been this major takeover. And we're seeing this world, we're seeing the world of Gilead through the eyes of a character named Offred, mm-hmm. who is in this new world. She was once much like us, and now she's in this role as a handmaid. And so handmaids are women in society who are still fertile. And because of their fertility, they've been kidnapped and placed in homes to basically be forced surrogates to bear children for the commanders who are in charge of the regime. And they are stripped of their identities, even down to their name. So the character we know as Offred, her name in the previous world was June, but she's called Offred because the commander who she serves is named Fred. So she's literally of Fred. Her whole identity is shaped around her service of this man. Mm-hmm. And she's also very visually identifiable as a handmaid by this bright red cloak she wears and a bonnet, a white bonnet that covers her eyes so she can't see or communicate with other people. Mm-hmm. And so we're hearing everything from her perspective. Yeah. So Brittany, can you tell us a little bit more about the visual world of Gilead?
Yeah. I think just the moment that you start watching the show, the visual landscape is very noteworthy. As Heidi mentioned, the handmaids are distinguished by these bright red dresses and then cloaks that they wear. You are able to distinguish other people in the society by their dress. So you have wives who really represent kind of that wealthy womanhood ideal, who are identified by their teal kind of green dress.
And they never really leave the home.
Women in this society are reduced to the most fundamental aspects of reproductive ability and then also domestic labor. So then you have Marthas, who basically function as your domestic labor force. They are the cooks and the cleaning women in this world. They are women who are not fertile, so they can't be used as handmaids, but they still serve a function in the society. And then you have aunts. Aunts are the women of the regime who work in the Red Center and who are a part of the re-education process for the handmaids. And the aunts are distinguished by this brown uniform that they wear. And the reason I mention the costuming and how visually distinguished it is because there's really no place for you to run. When you look at the armed guards that are stationed throughout the community, they are these almost, it's weird because you see the characters like the handmaids and the Marthas and you are brought back several generations. You look at them and it doesn't look like a modern day costume. But when you see these armed men who are patrolling the city, they have these very modern, sleek, all black ensembles and they're carrying guns. And then as a part of this visual landscape is the public display of bodies. And these are the bodies of people who in this time of before, they would have been abortion doctors. They might have been professors at academic universities. There are folks called gender traitors in this world who are actually gay, lesbian, or bisexual folks. And they've been completely reduced to the fact that they are not helping their quote unquote gender or respective gender propagate. And I mention that because I think it really becomes important later on when we're thinking about choice and we're thinking about explicit versus implicit violence, namely around something called the ceremony, which we're going to break down a little bit later. I just mention that because when you're looking at this environment, it becomes very clear that every choice that is made in Gilead is not made freely. So it's not even really a choice.
Right.
Everything that is done, every move, every decision is calculated knowing that you are under the threat of violence. And so, you know, that kind of leads into, we're going to be talking explicitly about sexual violence and rape. So that's a trigger warning that we just want to kind of mention. It's going to be pretty heavily discussed throughout the next 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah, because violence is an integral part of this society. And we're not always, it's very intentional when we're shown that explicit violence. But mm-hmm. I think, as you mentioned, that threat of if you deviate in any way,
yeah,
these bodies on the wall could be you,
yeah,
is a very explicit threat. And so it's interesting because this TV show of The Handmaid's Tale feels like very extreme, but it's also rooted. The author of the book, Margaret Atwood, was very explicit that when she was writing it, nothing she put in it was something that isn't already happening to women somewhere in our world. And it's not based on fantasy. It's based on an extension of our reality, which I think is why, knowing that similar things or these exact things do happen either in our country or in other parts of our world, is an important reason to talk about reproductive justice and what that is and what it looks like.
Yeah.
So reproductive justice is a term that was coined in the 1990s, 1994, is that right, Brittany?
Mm-hmm.
By a group of women of color after the International Conference on Population and Development.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taking the idea of abortion access and the pro-choice movement several steps further into looking at reproductive justice as part of human rights.
Mm-hmm.
So Brittany, can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah. So the group of African-American women who coined this term, they are from a collective called Sister Song, and it's a women of color reproductive justice collective. And they define reproductive justice as the right to maintain personal bodily autonomy, to have children, not have children, and parent the children we have in safe and sustainable communities. An example of this would be last week, Heidi and I mentioned the forced sterilization of Black, Brown, Native, and disabled communities. And so if you move this idea further along beyond pro-life and pro-choice, who actually has the right to make decisions about their bodies, who has access to accurate information to then make those choices? It really complicates things and expands the conversation in a really necessary way. And so along with this idea of reproductive justice is this idea of reproductive oppression, which is a means of selectively controlling the destiny of entire communities through the bodies of women and individuals. And it's a newer and more subtle form of negative eugenics. And so I think, like Heidi was saying, The Handmaid's Tale is a really great vehicle to have this conversation about which communities have the ability to reproduce and carry on. And so reproductive oppression summarizes the way that the state and others refuse to support us with quality services and resources, but at the same time interfere in our lives and our decisions. And, you know, that's evidenced by many things, including the current legislation that's being proposed to defund Planned Parenthood. But again, it's so much more than that.
Right, we're seeing we're seeing that taken to its fullest, most extreme extent, kind of compiling, happening all at once in The Handmaid's Tale. Mm-hmm. But again, based on elements that we're seeing now.
And, you know, even when you think about the idea of environmental degradation, that's the beauty of reproductive justice, is that it's fundamentally about human rights. And so it brings in civil, political, economic, social, cultural, environmental, developmental, and sexual rights. So things like the lead poisoning crisis that's happening in Baltimore, that is a reproductive justice right, because who is being impacted by lead poisoning? Whose children are being impacted by lead poisoning? Other examples might be communities who are dealing with nuclear fallout. And some of these communities, Brown and Pacific Islander communities, like the Marshall Islands, in Micronesia, women are giving birth to jellyfish babies, which are babies that are born without bones. And
as a direct result of the nuclear testing around those islands.
Yeah. So it's just really comprehensive. It's a really beautiful term that has the ability to propel us so much further. It's so much meatier than are you for or against abortion.
Yeah. And so we're going to use the framework of reproductive justice to dive into some more specific issues and scenes of what's happening in Handmaid's Tale and how that reproductive oppression is extended. But first, I want to take a moment to note that while in the context of The Handmaid's Tale, we're primarily going to be talking about how this plays out in heterosexual relationships or even women who might be lesbians who are forced into these relationships, it's really important to note that reproductive justice is in fact for everyone. I think something that's really notable in The Handmaid's Tale, even though they do represent the experience of what's happening to lesbian women in this society, they don't touch on what would happen to trans people at all. We can maybe assume that they would just be punished or hung as gender traitors, but we don't know. And I also want to highlight the centrality of reproductive justice and reproductive care for trans people as part of the movement, even though it's not our specific focus today.
So to just dive right in into The Handmaid's Tale, I mean, Heidi and I kind of went through episode by episode and pulled out each instance of violence that we could discern. But for the sake of brevity and time, we're going to be looking at some key scenes. Can you tell folks who might not be familiar with the show or the book, what is the Red Center?
Sure. So the Red Center is the first place fertile women go after they've been kidnapped to be used by the regime. So for Offred, the character we're following, she is kidnapped when she and her husband and her daughter are trying to flee across the border to Canada to safety. And she's taken there in her normal clothes that she was wearing and already sees women sitting there in the beginnings of these handmade costumes. And it's basically a place where they are psychologically and physically tortured into preparing to submit to their roles as handmaids. And they're not all necessarily actually compliant internally. Throughout the show, we're hearing Offred's internal monologue of how she realized that this all is bullshit, but she basically has to follow along to survive and to stay alive for her daughter.
Yeah. And the violence that happens in the Red Center is just right in your face. From the very first moment that it's introduced, there is a character named Janine, who we're going to talk about in a moment, who is resistant. And her resistance results in her losing an eye almost immediately. And there was a passage from that?
Yeah, there's a biblical, that's all based on text from the Old Testament, and she's basically talking back to the aunts who are re-educating them, and there's a biblical quote that's something like, if my right eye offends thee, pluck it out. And they literally do that within a half hour of her being in the Red Center. They blind her in one eye. And so there's that constant threat. And they also always are, all the aunts carry cattle prods. And if they resist in any way, they're electrocuted.
And so there's a very specific scene where Janine is sitting at the center of a circle of handmaids in the Red Center, and she is being questioned about a gang rape that happened at a party. And Aunt Lydia looks at her and says, "So whose fault was this?" And all of the handmaids are forced to point at Janine and repeat, "Her fault, her fault, her fault." And so it's not just the institutional victim blaming of the regime. It also becomes peer victim blaming and peer slut shaming.
And when Offred doesn't want to participate, she's immediately smacked and forced to do it.
Yeah.
There's no way to opt out.
So there's the victim blaming, and then there's the slut shaming of that scene. And then it's just pretty consistent throughout the show. They make references to birth control and promiscuity and adultery as these sins and as these things that are standing in the way of women embracing their fertile abilities.
Right. It's very much about this control. And I guess when we're thinking about the role of sex in this community, the next thing that we think about is the ceremony. So after the women are basically tortured into submission at the Red Center, they are assigned to a commander who is someone who is high up in the regime of this new world, because those are the men who are deemed worthy of reproducing. And so Offred is sent to the house of Commander Fred Waterford, where once a month when she is ovulating, they participate in the ceremony, which they call it the ceremony to kind of sanitize it, but really it's once a month she is raped by the commander. And it's, like everything in the society, very symbolic. She is positioned with her head between the legs of the wife, because she's very much seen as the conduit between the wife and the commander to be the vessel for a child. And that's based on the biblical story of Jacob, Rachel, and Bila, and Bila the handmaid was the surrogate for Rachel. So again, it's everything's rooted in this ideology, this fundamentalist ideology. And Offred is raped with the hope that she will become pregnant. But it's also incredibly sterile. It's not about pleasure at all. It's very much the idea of doing your duty for the Republic.
Yeah. And it's that scene, it's the showing of the ceremony, which is why I felt it really important to mention the visible threat, because I think for some people, they might watch these scenes and think, oh, well, she's not resisting, or she's not saying no, she's not fighting back, so that's not rape. But if you are living under the threat of death, or you're living under the threat of being kidnapped or tortured, then you realize that that is really no choice at all. And something that you mentioned, Heidi, that had me thinking, and when we've been talking about this particular episode, we didn't even really mention the fact that she has a daughter. And so when we bring it back to this idea of reproductive justice includes that we have the right to parent the children that we already have, Offred is driven, or June, I should say, June is driven by the knowledge that she has a daughter and that she needs to make it out, and she needs to stay sane, and she needs to stay alive so that she can get back to her daughter and make sure that she's okay. And so there's just an ever-present threat of violence.
And I know in the book, it's not so much in the show yet, but there's her constant fear. Her daughter's only 4 or 5 when she's taken, and she's terrified that her daughter will be re-educated to the point where she won't even remember her.
Yeah, yeah. And in even in the language, like, you see the violence of calling rape a ceremony. You see the violence of calling someone who is gay or lesbian a gender traitor. That violence is very skillfully weaved throughout the show and the book.
So the last instance that we wanted to focus on is something that occurs to one of those so-called gender traitors, who's a character who's Offred's walking partner, Offglen, who is... We find out that she is a lesbian and had a wife and a son in the previous world. And it is eventually found out that she was having an affair with a Martha, or one of the domestic servants in the house. And for that, when that is discovered by the regime, by one of those ever watchful eyes, the person she was having an affair with is killed in front of her, presumably to be hung on that wall. And then Offglen is genitally mutilated mm-hmm. by the regime. And it's this really haunting, really messed up moment where the aunt tells her, the same aunt who was in the retraining center, that, oh, don't worry, you'll still be able to be fertile and to give birth, but now you won't be tempted by pleasure anymore, basically, is what she's saying.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, it's the explicit violence of the genital mutilation, but also the other violences of slut shaming, birth control shaming. All of these things represent the idea that women do not have the right to sexual pleasure, which, newsflash, is a sexual right, a human right, and that the sole purpose of sex in this world is reproduction. So you're stripping folks of their identity. You're stripping them of their name. You're stripping them of intimacy and connection, all as a means to control reproduction.
And that control is present in every aspect of the world. Even the ability to have relationships between the other mm-hmm. handmaids who know each other. They can't know their real name. That's a risk to tell the written name from before. They identify each other by their commander's names. Mm-hmm. The regime is set up so that they can't have friendships, they can't have relationships, they can't have connections. And this appears to be true for just about everyone. It's true yeah. for the wives in their houses, it's true for the Marthas, it's especially true for the handmaids.
Yeah.
Because the ability to have connection, to have the pleasure that comes from friendships, from yeah. intimacy, much less sexual pleasure, is prohibited because to be able to have those relationships would be able to eventually resist. And the same is true for knowledge. Handmaids aren't allowed to read or write or to have access to any form of information. And it's all about this complete and total control and stripping of all human rights, which I think is interesting. Brittany and I struggled for a really long time to find the connecting thread kind of solidified for this show. And I think the idea is that since, as you talked about, reproductive justice connects to all human rights and is fundamentally tied to all human rights, to have complete reproductive control and complete reproductive oppression, all human rights had to be stripped.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one. There was no way to give any leeway, any freedom, because if you have any freedom of choice, then you can resist and then you can have control over your own life. It had to be completely stripped from them.
You know, when we talk about this idea of everything being highly regulated, even the way that they can interact with one another, the language that they can use to interact with one another is very scripted. The way that they greet one another, the handmaids are not even allowed to look at the commanders they serve in the eye. It's not allowed. Mm-hmm. You can't make eye contact. And so...
And their greeting is related to fertility.
It's, yes.
Blessed be the fruit. And then the other person responds, may the Lord open.
Yeah.
And so even hello, goodbye is about fertility. Everything is about that controlling and essentializing them to that one aspect of yeah. their identity.
And so some folks might be wondering, cool, reproductive justice, but this is a Hope Works podcast. Why are you guys talking about this? Reproductive justice, reproductive coercion is central to the work that we do at Hope Works.
Absolutely.
Because if you think about mechanisms of control, and if you think about the fact that intimate partner violence and sexual assault are about power and control, it becomes really easy to start threading those ideas together. We talk to our clients and we talk to survivors about birth control sabotage. Some folks that I know have either had their birth control messed with, or something has happened where a condom was slipped off as a means of getting someone pregnant. And if that person is pregnant, well, then they can't leave this abusive relationship.
And that's actually something we're seeing trending in the news right now, that idea of slipping off a condom mid-sex, and they're calling it stealthing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this new trend, which is actually a form of sexual assault, absolutely, and relationship violence and power and control dynamics. If someone, we talked about consent last month, if someone consents to sex with protection and with a condom, that doesn't mean they consent to you taking that condom off halfway through. And it's this idea that men have a right to spread their seed, which is mm-hmm. very much what we're seeing in this fictionalized world of The Handmaid's Tale happening here in real life. And really, this isn't a trend as in it's not new at all. This has always been happening. But I think it's really interesting that the fact that it's being given this platform as a trend now, and that there's online communities forming around men who want to do stealthing, is making it more common and more messed up mm-hmm. because it's being seen as this kind of right in counter to women's ability to control the reproduction.
Yeah. And I mean, even, you know, those are very explicit examples. But when you look at, in my experience as an advocate, I hear so often that a survivor stays because they are worried about what will happen to the kids. Or, you know, in instances where the abusive partner is a man, you know, this refrain that he's such a good father and I don't want to take him away from the kids. They still need access to him, etc. If a person is making a choice about their life based on their kids or based on the lives of their kids, that is absolutely a reproductive justice issue. If I have to make a decision about my health and well-being, and my health and well-being becomes secondary because I want to make sure that my kids have access to their father, that, you know, it's absolutely an issue of reproductive justice.
And it extends out to other human rights as well. If we think about things like the right to equal pay for equal work, mm-hmm. one of the really eerie things that happens in the show is when we see flashbacks to the previous time before the regime of Gilead took over. And there's a scene where June, I believe she works at a publishing house, mm-hmm. and men with guns have come in and forced her boss to basically fire all of the women mm-hmm. in the organization at the same time, and their right to earn money. And then she later tries to go after her. She's been fired from her job. She tries to go buy a coffee, and they tell her that her card is no longer accepted. And she finds out that her entire bank account has been cut off from access to her, and all of her funds have been transferred over to her husband. Mm-hmm. And so that part seems extreme, but when you think about it as the way right now, still, white women earn 70% of what men earn, and right, is that right? And then if it becomes African American women, it's something like 53% less to a dollar. I don't remember the exact numbers, but women in general earn much less percentage of what men make to a dollar. And then if it becomes women of color and different racial breakdowns, it becomes even less. And that gendered and racialized oppression of what people's work is worth mm-hmm. is also tied to that. And the ability to earn money is part of the ability to take care of your children, and the ability to get health care from your job is part of your ability to make solid reproductive decisions.
And there's a Moira, who is June's best friend in the show, you know, draws that out immediately, that if all of these women lost their jobs, then the first thing that they would do is ship off to another country. And so that was why they needed to be denied access to their bank accounts immediately after they lost their job, so that you don't lose, quote unquote, the reproductive force, because they would migrate elsewhere.
Ah, I remember what my point was. Yes, it took me a while to get back to it. So my point is that when you see that scene, there's not a lot of resistance mm-hmm. to the fact that all the women are being fired. All the men in the office essentially stay silent. Mm-hmm. And then when June goes home and realizes that her bank account has been shut down, her husband's response, even though he's someone who loves her, is, oh, I'll take care of you. Like, don't worry, I've got your financial need. And he's basically being complacent to what's going on, to that shift. And so we're running out of time, but we wanted to end up today with reiterating that everything that happens in this show, The Handmaid's Tale, is based on stuff that is happening now in our world, in our country, in our communities.
And globally.
And so what you have the opportunity to do to prevent something as extreme, or even not as extreme, to stop the stuff that's happening now that's messed up and is part of reproductive coercion and reproductive oppression and control, is to take action. And the first thing you can do is to educate yourself. This can be formally and informally. Part of it can be watching The Handmaid's Tale and reading The Handmaid's Tale, but also reading about what's going on now historically, being aware of legislation that's going on that would restrict reproductive rights, and then taking action on that, calling your political representatives or working in your community to make change.
Yeah. And really just learn about reproductive justice. Learn that it's more than abortion access. Learn, and even though that is incredibly important, I spend my spare time volunteering for the Baltimore Abortion Fund. In no way do I want to diminish the importance of abortion access, but understand that for a lot of folks, it's more than that. If you don't have access to information, if you don't have access to providers, if you don't have access to medication, all of those things impact your ability to make choices about your family, and really just have a global awareness. Understand that things that are happening in the United States are impacted by what's happening elsewhere, and that things happening elsewhere are absolutely impacted by what's happening in the United States.
I think that's about what we got. So thanks for listening today. I guess watch The Handmaid's Tale and call us if you want to talk about it. We've got lots more we could say.
Yeah, and if you haven't followed our Facebook page, please do. We'd love to have more dialogue about what folks are thinking about the podcast, ideas, feedback. Heidi and I are always open to hearing what folks think.
Yeah, so thank you so much, and we'll see you next month.
Thanks.